So as we mentioned last week, Adar has a lot of yontivs, hilulas, this year, because there's a double Adar. And of course, there's plenty of tzaddikim to discuss. But I was very intrigued looking over some of my Rebbe's Gilyonis, which come out every week. It's called the Ehu. And in the back, he has stories of different tzaddikim each week, which he has a Kabbalah from his Rebbe, or things which he saw. The sweetest stories by the Rebbe. So, it caught my attention, and I know the Yahrzeit is not now, it's in Tishrei. Actually, the Yahrzeit is Yom Kippur, or Naftali Chaim from Jikov. But since Purim is Kiyom HaKippurim, so we're going to make it work this time. I think this is one of those tzaddikim which we've said many times over the course of coming together and speaking about tzaddikim. Two things. Every single tzaddik, if we could say this in a kavadika way, has his own flavor, his own unique qualities, something very sweet, unique, something different. But Naftali Chaim was definitely one of these tzaddikim, as you'll see in a moment, that it was definitely off the beaten path, but he had a path of his own. And you'll see in a few moments what we mean by that. And secondly, if not for the fact that we come together every single week and we speak about a different tzaddik, there would be many tzaddikim who we would never hear. And there's going to be inevitably many tzaddikim which we won't get to. And there's many that we don't even know about. But again, this is one of those tzaddikim of Tali Chaim that you have to be in the know to know such a tzaddik. And he goes down in that Kufa about 100 years ago as one of the greatest. He's the grandson of the Devei Chaim. Also, he was the son of the Imrei Noyam. These are people who we've spoken about. You start to put things together once you hear about the different tzaddikim. The Imrei Noyam from Jikov, he was the son of Lazer Jikover, who was the son of the Rav Shitzer. But he married into the Mishpacha of the Devei Chaim. He said about himself, and this really defines his life, is from the time that he reached a certain das and a certain clarity about life in this world, he decided that he was not going to engage in any rabbonis. Nothing which had to do with any kavod. And he said that a person has to be bereach min hakavod to such an extreme, to such an extent, that unless he has a gilim in Hashemayim, that they tell him, lei choshas b'nei Yisrael, go in to save the Jewish people. Be a Rav, be a Rebbe, be a this, get out there, do something. He says, your mom is playing with fire, and you accept any position of kavod. And although he was in line to be a Rebbe, he had nothing to do with it. So, we'll get a little bit more about that in a moment. His grandfather, Rav Lazer Jikover, he said about Rav Naftali Chaim, he said, "Loitam tam chait miyamav." Never was time any chait in his life. It was a kaddish v'tahar. As a youngster, he was a little bit rambunctious as a kid. He used to like to pull shticks. He was a very different type of a kid. And I think it's from a rebbish family, maybe. So once, as a young boy, he would walk in the street with like a mappa, with like some type of a towel on his eyes. And his grandfather, Blazer, said to him, he said, "Naftali Chaim, what are you doing?" He said, "Zaidi, I'm trying to reach the madrigas of the Chayza from Lublin." That's a Kedusha Seinayim of the Chayza, to reach his madrigas. So he told him, he said, "Naftali Chaim," he says, "the Ayyad Be'eloi," spoke about Ayyad Be'eloi, "Ayyad Be'eloi, they say about him that he reached only one third of the madrigas of the Chayza from Lublin. And you're trying to reach the madrigas of the Chayza from Lublin?" One of the very extreme things which he did is that although he was father already to four children, he was tried to be master himself so that people wouldn't know his godless and his tzidkas. And already when people in where he lived in Sanz were starting to figure out, you know, who he was, and he was a tzaddik and he was master himself, but they were on to him. He decided that he was going to move elsewhere. And I forget exactly where he moved, but he moved to a different location. He was bouncing back between Sanz and Jikov, and everybody wanted a piece of Naftali Chaim. So he changed his clothes and he made himself out to be a regular person, and he would try to be out of sight, out of touch. But people were after him, and then he decided he was moving to Eretz Yisrael. And he left his children behind, his family behind. He sent them to his shver. And he left by himself. He was into isolation. He went to Tzfas, and he thought that in Tzfas that he would be okay. Nobody would know where he was, who he was. But there was like a contingency of Tzanz Chassidim there, and they had heard that Naftali Chaim came to Eretz Yisrael, and they thought that this person who was walking around was Naftali Chaim, and they were Taka, right? So he moved to Yerushalayim to escape that. And he blended in Yerushalayim with all the other people there. But even still, he wasn't happy with that. So people should have known he would pretend to be like a Meshuggah. He dressed like a poor person, and he pretended that he would say things which were crazy, and so that nobody would have. He would even it wasn't normal. Right? He didn't have any normal conditions. Olam Hazeh was completely hefker to him. He didn't care a single thing about Olam Hazeh. In fact, he actually where he lived in a hole somewhere, in the place that was the closest place you could be to Har Habayis. That's where he wanted to be. And in that way, he was able to stay away from everybody. Nevertheless, although he was out of touch with everybody and he's living in Yerushalayim, he would send letters to people who he knew, everywhere in the world. And everybody saw by him, even they came in contact with him, he couldn't hide everything, open Ruach HaKodesh. We'll see some of the stories about that. But he kept in touch with his wife and his children, but he would tell them like what things which would happen. That I believe this is true. I tried to confirm this, you know, on Motzei Shabbos, that his father, the Imri Noyam, used to call him my Meshuggah. Mm-hmm. My Meshuggah, Naftali Chaim. But that was a way of like it was an affectionate thing. But he acted like a Meshuggah. But his father knew that he was a Kaddish. He was his oldest son. But he would call him my Meshuggah. In fact, once There was a bit of pushing by the Tish, by the Imri Noyam, and it was getting a little bit tight for the Rebbe. So he made a comment like, "No, give room for the father of Naftali Chaim." That's how he referred to himself. Give some room for the father of Naftali Chaim. He had in order to come into him, so he put up, instead of like, he didn't have, I don't know if he had a door, but he put up some type of a white cloth, a very big, thick white cloth, which was in front of his door, that was like by his door. And as soon as somebody would touch the white cloth, he would know exactly who was at the door, even though he wasn't there. And this was like only 100 years ago. And if you were allowed to come in, he would say by your name, he would say, okay, you know, Shmuel Chaim, you're like, you know, come on in. But if not, he would like scream and say, "Get out of here! Who said you could come here?" He was like made himself to be like a meshuggah now, so nobody would come.
I think he would let you in.
Yeah, he wrote a sefer called Mincha Chadasha, which is on Shas and other things. And one day, nobody knows how, but it was like all over Europe. His svarim, nobody knows how it got there, who produced it, this and that, but whatever. He was an Ish Pella. Everybody saw by him open Nisim all the time. For example, as we said, he secluded himself and he learned Torah and Avodah all day and all night. And He would sleep on a mitas barzel, like on a copper bed, you know, without any, no cloth, no nothing. That's how he slept. And the people who would come and they would give him their kmias, they would give the kvitlach to him. So he would take the kvitlach, he would put it in a bucket, and put it under his bed and burn it. Whatever that was his inyan, that he was bimalit, that it was some type of a ktayra, sechveis. But that was the type of things which, you know, and then he would sleep on the bed and after he lit it, and you know, things which were unusual to most people, but that was his way. At one point, his Zayda, the Divrei Chaim, he wanted to find a way for him to come home. So at the time, there was a big debate about a certain type of a chicken, which came from Kafrisin. I don't know exactly what that is. And a machlokes amongst the poskim, the kashas of these chickens. So the Divrei Chaim had said that in Eretz Yisrael, they had a Messiah from that in Tzfas. And since he knew that his grandson, Rav Tzadi Chaim, had connections there, so he asked him to come home, and on the way home, to bring him some of these chickens, so he could look them over, and study them, to see about the kashrus of these chickens. And the Divrei Chaim has tshuvas, and Shas and Chuvas Divrei Chaim about these chickens. So, already Rav Tzadi Chaim knew why his Zayda was asking him to come home. So he sent him back a letter, saying as follows, and he wrote B'derech Melitza. Everything was with cryptic, and with rhymes, and riddles, and things like that. He says, "Pekudas veRatzayin kved kedushas chasni zekeni pitzadik eshmar." This is the decree of my grandfather, the tzadik of the generation. I will keep to that. Ve'aser ritzayin de'vezeh, and I will fulfill your wishes. Va'avol letzans, I'll come to tzans. Bekarav am hatana goyle mikivitz, I'll bring these chickens with me. Fine. Again, it wasn't like hopping on a plane and coming to tzans from Tzfas. Avol in kved kedushas choyishiv shebezeh yitasu esilei shebetzans. If my Zaydi, if you think that you're going to chap me, then I'm going to stay in Tzans, or the Kabbal is a Rabbanus, or to take a Rabbanus, you have to know, I won't see the face of the sun ever again. I'm not going to take any Rabbanus. That's what he wrote. So he came to Tzans with these chickens, and as soon as he came to Tzans with the chickens, he went straight home, he locked the door, and he spent time with his family. There's only a few days that went by, that the Divrei Chaim made a request that he should come to him, that he came to the Divrei Chaim, and he gained the chickens, and he went back to Eretz Yisrael. He kept exactly to what he said. He went back to Eretz Yisrael afterwards. On his way home, he wanted to go meet the tzaddikim of the generation, so he said he stopped off at about 150 Balei Ruach HaKodesh and tzaddikim on the way back home. Now, he didn't just stop and go back to Eretz Yisrael. He wanted to meet the different generation, but of course, he wouldn't say who he was. So he traveled in a way that nobody knew was of Tzadik Chaim, because he was famous. I didn't want anybody to know who he was. So when he would give kvitlach to the tzaddikim, he would write on it, you know, you have to write where you're from and what your name is, you know, your city, and then who you're the son of. So he would write that he came from the city of Zinkov, although he is from Jinkov, but Zinkov and Jinkov is the same. And instead of writing Naftali Chaim, he would write his name as Noyach, because it's Nun Ches, is Naftali Chaim, he said Noyach. And instead of Devoira, he wrote Ben Dabra, because missing the Vav. So that's also like a Yiddish name. So he made a way that it wouldn't be like long, that he, you know, finagled the letters a little bit, so when he came to Sadiger, to Avram Yaakov, the Abir Yaakov from Sadiger Rebbe, so he took the kvittel and he looked at him and he said, "So where are you from?" He said, "She says in the kvittel. Says in the kvittel where I'm from." So he said, "And your name again? What's your name?" So he said, "It's in the kvittel." He said, "It's in the kvittel." He says, "Oh, okay." So he couldn't fool him the Abbi Yaakov. And when he came also to Komarna, I mean to Zidichev, to Yitzhak Isaac from Zidichev, he couldn't fool him either. Also, he was able to see. He knew exactly who he was. He didn't call his bluff. But there were certain tzaddikim that he came that they looked at the kvittel and they were able to see. Couldn't fool them. When he came to Belz, this was his last stop before going to Eretz Yisrael. He came to Belz by Beshula Belzer, tzaddik of the generation, one of them. So he spent Yom Kippur there, and as soon as in the middle of Ne'ilah, Rabbi Shula, he had a hergish that Naftali Chaim was there. As soon as the day was ending, he knew that he was there, and he went looking for him. And Naftali Chaim knew also that he knew that he was there. So as soon as the davening was over, he fled. And he made sure that he stayed at a place was at the corner of the city. So when he went looking for him all over the city, he was already at the farthest place, that's where he stayed, and he was gone. And he went from there to Eretz Yisrael. So many stories of his Ruach HaKodesh. So for example, says that the His father, the Imenoyam, passed away on Yom HaShishi, on a Friday, in the city of Carlsbad. We spoke about the story. It was a very beautiful story about the Petir of the Imenoyam. And he had said that before he passed away, that if you don't take him to Carlsbad, which is a place that Tzaddikim went for treatment from the doctors, he says, you'll still hear from me Malchiyas, Zichronos, and Shofros for this coming year. But they didn't listen. And they carried on to Carlsbad. And even on the way, they saw a cross. And the Imenoyim said that, I have a Kabbalah, that if you see a cross on a journey, I think it was from the Abderav, that you don't continue on the journey, or from the Rimanover, you don't go. So they said, no, it's Zayde, Tati, we're taking you to Carlsbad. And he continued, and he passed away in Carlsbad. And it was a big tsar, because now they had to bring him, to bury him in Jikov. But there was a Gzeira in that town, in Carlsbad, where he was buried, that anybody who died there had to be buried there. You couldn't carry mason from place to place. So the Atiris Yeshua, who succeeded him, we spoke about him too a couple years ago, he didn't know what to do because they couldn't leave because of the authorities. But he couldn't bury him in Carlsbad, he had to bury him in Jikov. So he was in the middle of his pondering this, he gets a letter in the mail from Naftali Chai in Carlsbad. And he opens up the letter, and it says in there, as follows. And this was written weeks earlier. It was dated weeks earlier. And he wrote, Hayosh beches b'tamus tal gavino. Now that since we know that our Tati will die on the 8th of Tammuz, which was the day that he died, v'yistapku heichan l'kavro, and you're not going to know what to do to bury him, as hinini oymer l'chukadas malasai, so I'm going to tell you what to do. Yal bishuhu begodav kadam chai, put on clothes like a regular person, as if he's alive. Two people should carry him on both sides and make it appear as if he's alive, like he's walking. And with that, you're going to go on a train. And he told him exactly what to do. He's going to go to Krakow, from Krakow to Zikov, and then you're going to go a few parsas, and you're going to see that there's a person there who's going to be having horses over there. You're going to hire the horses, and they're going to take you to Zikov. And he says, I'm going to arrange with the Chevek Kadishas and Naftali Chaim that he's going to be buried in Yerushalayim. Now, whatever that meant, because he was going to be buried in Jikov. But he says, I'm arranging that the neshama of our Tati is going to come into Yerushalayim. I'm going to take care of everything he needs here in Yerushalayim. You take care of everything over there. That's it. That's what he said. In fact, when he was about to pass away, he said, You don't have to tell Naftali Chaim that I passed away. He even said that. He's going to know right away that I passed away. You don't even have to tell him. He didn't even send anybody to tell him. He said, Naftali Chaim's going to know what happens with me. And in fact, he was walking in that Erev Shabbos with his very close chaver, Rav Elazar Mendel from Lelov. He's actually, his yahrzeit is in Adar. Maybe we'll speak about him. There's a lot to say about him. And they were walking together, and all of a sudden, Naftali Chaim stopped, and he said, we have to say Kaddish now. I need a Kaddish. My father just passed away. And they're being the top line, I have to say Kaddish now. So he gathered 10 men, and he said Kaddish there. And he said that was the only Kaddish he said for the entire year. He didn't say another Kaddish after that. Just that one Kaddish. And he had his inyanim and everything. Once you hear a maisa like that, you can imagine about everything else that he saw and he knew. He sent letters telling everybody what they should do with their business and how to raise their children. All over the cores of the earth, he sent letters telling everybody things like this. He tried to make it to Jikov to his father for Rosh Hashanah, and there was some delays along the way, and he had to stay in, I don't know, some type of a city, I don't know exactly which one. And he didn't mind, you know, sleeping in just in the shul or whatever it was with the other poor people who were there. He didn't care, and he was actually sleeping amongst the other aniyim in their company for Rosh Hashanah. And one ani said to the other ani, he says, you know that they say about the Kaddish of Naftali Chaim that he spends a lot of time with the poor people. And he was mamish, he was there, and they were talking about him. But he made himself out like he didn't hear it, and like he didn't say, oh, that's me, you know, he said to me. Even if it was the poor people, he didn't care. He said, I just continued on and let them talk about him. And he said, Baruch HaKaddish, he said after that, he said, I saw when I was there on Rosh Hashanah, I said to myself, right now, my brother, the Atiris Yeshua, Yeshua Jigavir, he's sitting with my father, the Minayim, at the Tish, and it's b'kedush and with the dveikis and all this good zachen. And he said, and I'm here with, you know, the archi parchis, and this is my, you know, look, my chever over here. And he said, then he said to himself, but the chidushim which I was mechadish in that place in Torah, I wouldn't trade it for the Rosh Hashanah by my father. He was a big guy, and you can imagine. He wrote a svarim called the Mincha Chadasha. He said, I wouldn't trade it for the dveikis that the test she was having right now by my father. So he didn't have a gabbai, and he lived by himself. But there was a family who, although he tried to keep everybody far away, nobody should know anything about him, who were able to observe his greatness, his godless. And the mother of the family would like do his laundry, basically, for him. But she said he was such a kaddish, she couldn't even tell what beged was clean or which beged wasn't clean. And he's ish kaddish ad ma'ed. And her daughter was very sick. And she like was losing her mind, and she, I don't know exactly what type of a machla was. And she begged her husband to go to Rav Naftali Chaim to get some type of a refuah. And he didn't want to, but then he realized after seeing many doctors, he had no choice. So he came to Rav Naftali Chaim, and Naftali Chaim wrote a kameya, an amulet that he gave to her, to the daughter. And he told the parents, he says, this kameya, Rani's kameya, and he said, he put it on her, right underneath her neck. And he says, you can't tell anybody about this kameya. If you tell anybody about this kameya won't work. So they put it on, and she was a different person afterwards. But it was the talk of the town, because, you know, now you have to tell everybody, like, what happened. And they just would say, you know, we can't say. Until finally it happened. That it was after, it was like, I think the father was drank a little bit, and he slipped, and he said something. And as soon as that happened, she lost her. And he said it was about the kameya. So there's two different nuances to the story. Either is that one, she lost her refuas right away, or when people heard that it was a kameya, which was written by Naftali Chaim, so they came and they ripped off the kameya from her, and she lost everything. Now, why did they rip it off? Because there was a big machlekes, you know, between tzanz and sadiger. And this would be ammunition against, since he was a tzanz or enikel, that, you know, you don't write kameyas. Sadigim didn't do things like that. But they were going to use it against him, against the tzanzers, the sadigers were going to use against the tzanzers that the Rishpacha is writing kameyas. So this was very juicy. And they opened up the kameya, and they saw that inside the kameya, it said the following words, Nissan back. Nissan back. So who was Nissan back? It was a guy. Nissan back.
Nissan Black's father.
He was a very famous Askan. He built the Shul Tiferes Yisrael in Yerushalayim, and they call it Nissan Back's Shul. I don't know if today they do, but Rav Tzadik Chaim spent a lot of time there. So who was he? He actually was a Sadi Ger Chassid. And he foresaw this whole Maisa happening. So they thought they had something juicy against him because he was a grandson of Sanz. But when they opened the Kameya, it was a Sadi Ger Chassid, his name in the Kameya. So they couldn't use it. The Sadi Geras couldn't use it. They were so perplexed that in the Kameya had the name of one of their big Askanim. So they asked him afterwards. They said, so why did you write Nissan back in the thing? Like, nothing makes no sense. You saw his Kedusha. He was able to be poil whatever he wanted. He just put some guy's name in there. He was a Chasha person, but, you know, that was the Refuah, Nissan back. So he said, I thought like this. He says, everybody's afraid of Nissan back. So I'm sure that the Chitzoinim, the Sitra Achra, is also afraid of Nissan back. Because everybody hears Nissan back. Everybody's afraid. So they're going to be also afraid of it. That was what he said. Whenever he would sign a letter, he would always write at the end, Mochar Yihiyah Ha'oiz Hazeh. That's how he would sign it. Which means, tomorrow will be the sign. That's how he would. And throughout his whole life, he would go around, he would meet people, he would sing, you know, the Nusach from Yom Kippur. He would say, V'ha'koyanin, V'ha'am, like the Chazan says by Musaf. He would just sing that randomly. Everybody who he saw, he would say that kind of amen. Nobody knew what was going on with it. So What happened was that on Yom Kippur, in the middle of Musaf, so word got out that Naftali Chaim was a guy Sais and he was going to die. And in the middle of Musaf, everybody left the shul, except the Chazan. Everybody wanted to be by him for the Shas Petir when he passed away, except the Chazan. He couldn't move. He was in the middle of Shmon Esrei. So they went and they were there by the Petira. And when they came back in the shul, the Chazan was up to the words, Vakoyanim V'Am. Vakoyanim V'Am. So his whole life he would say, Vakoyanim V'Am, Vakoyanim V'Am to everybody. And Machia says that, that's referring to Yom Kippur. We say that on the air of Yom Kippur. That's because tomorrow will be the sign that's referring to Yom Kippur. So he knew, Mamish knew his whole life. He knew exactly, not just the day that his Petir would be, but the Mamish, the moment of his Petir. It was very, very clear. And just one last story. There's so many good stories, but just one last one because it has to do with his Petir. So after he passed away, nobody was buried next to him. Nobody wanted to be next to him because they were afraid, because he was such a Kaddish. Nobody wanted to be buried next to him. So for like a very wide radius, it was completely open. Once when his nephew, the Barnava Rav, came to be Mespalo there, and came with a whole group of people, and he was looking around and he just realized, noticed that nobody has been buried there. For tens of years, nobody was buried there. So he remembered that his uncle used to say to him, Simchale Mumchale Samachle. That's what he would say. So he said, now I understand the remez that he would always say to me. Because my simcha, mumchali, I'm not sure what that is about, but it's a samachli, which means that he wanted that I should be buried next to him. So he said that he purchased a spot next to his uncle. And a short while after that, once people saw that he had broken in to be buried in that spot, other people wanted to be buried in the area. So he was a very chashuv person. He was his name was Rav Moshe HaKoyen from Tzanz. He was a very big gvir in Askan, and he supported a lot the Devi Chaim and other institutions. So he bought the other side next to Rav Naftali Chaim. And he was passing by the Barnava Rav, and he said to him, you know, I have this chiyad, you know, the Rav is going to be buried on one side. I thought I would buy the spot next to it. So the Barnava Rav just looked at him, and he didn't say anything. So a short while before, he was a very healthy person, this was Moshe. In a short while, I don't know exactly how much longer, how much time passed until this started to happen, he started to have these pains on his right side, on his arm, and then it spread to his leg, and his whole right side of his body started to become crippled, and he passed away like that. So the Barnava Rav explained, he said, he didn't ask me permission, you know, his thought, he just bought the place next to it. And I thought that I didn't say anything at the time because I thought, Min HaShemayim, you know, that's where he wanted him to be buried. But if he asked me, I would have told him not to. He says, the reason why his whole right side became crippled, because that would be the side that would be next to Naftali Chaim. In order to be buried next to Naftali Chaim, he had to be a Kaddish. So in his lifetime, he had to be Mezachich himself. He had to purify the whole right side of his body in his lifetime to be buried next to Naftali Chaim. That's what he said. I'm sure. Again, it's one of these tzaddikim that if you didn't hear about it, you would never believe it, but... Ish Kaddish on mine again. The fact that he was buried, he died on Yom Kippur. You know, such a thing. Kaddish Kaddishim. Yeah.